last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
And in the United States, Charles Lindbergh spoke out.
These wars in Europe are wars in which our civilization is defending itself against some Asiatic intruder. There is no Genghis Khan or Xerxes marching against our Western nations. This is simply one more of those age-old struggles in our old family of nations. If we enter fighting for democracy abroad, we may end by losing it at home.
The U.S. remained out of the fray until that one fateful day.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date will live in infamy. United States America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
The large events people provide framework for looking at World War II, but they're not the whole story. For the war series, Burns and Novick interviewed veterans and people who lived at the time. They were looking to strip away the well-known big stories of World War II and focus on personal reflections. Lynn Novick.
You know, I think, in a way, we think we know about the Second World War, but there's a lot about it that we don't know. It has gotten sort of, it's become almost like a black and white war. It's become sort of ancient history. People who are under 30, they actually don't know much about it at all. And people perhaps a bit older sort of maybe know the big milestones. But I don't think many people really know what the war was really for the people who did the fighting and the dying. You know, how terrible it really was, how brutal some of the conditions that people lived in, kind of scale of civilian casualties that happened, what happened when you bombed entire countries to smithereens. I really don't think that we think about that as much as perhaps we should. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to make this film.
And Burns.
Well, we wanted to pick four towns that would not only be free of association and preconception for the audience, but for us as well. We wanted to go in there, these towns as blank slates, so that whatever we discovered would be true and workable. And we talked to literally hundreds, more than 600 human beings, the 40-odd that we filmed, supplemented by the 10 who didn't serve to the present, though we're counting on the vocal work of Tom Hanks and Samuel L. Jackson, Josh Lucas and Bob Navalli and Adam Arkin and Conway and Eli Wallach to bring him alive, and I can tell you, they do. It's like a novel or a Shakespearean play. This is a gigantic tragedy. And in a Russian novel, you might have 50 characters whose stories you intertwine and interrelate, set up against the drop of this huge cataclysm. In a Shakespearean play, you open to the first page and there's the listing of the characters, dramatis personae, and you go the main character, Hamlet, down to the guard. And so too this film. Of the 50-odd people, you know, most are cameo, secondary, tertiary characters. But a handful have become actually central characters whose lives you follow through almost every episode, that you get to know like family members, somebody you'd have had Thanksgiving with. I mean, these were not experts, not generals. These are not famous people from the war. These are so-called ordinary people. And you learn at the end that the terror story doesn't preclude you getting to know the FDRs and the Winston Churchills and the important generals. But they're not central, because those people don't do the fighting and the dying.
If I could be with you 1 hour tonight, if I were free to do the things I might, I want you to know that I wouldn't go till I told you, honey, that I love you so. If I could be with you, I'd love you long. If I could be with you, I'd love you strong. I'm telling you too, I'd be anything blue. If I could be with you for an hour, if I could be with you.
Thank you.
I wouldn't go till I told you, baby, that I love you so. If I could be with you, I'd love you long. If I could be with you, I'd love you strong. Well, I'm telling you, I'd be anything but blue if I be with you for 1 hour. If I could be with you.
That was K-Star singing If I Be With You 1 hour tonight. You're listening to an in-depth look at Ken Burns' The War. I'm David Cruz. Producer Lynn Nook.
For sometimes when we interviewed people, they, for whatever reason, the combination of the questions and just sitting down and focusing on that time in their life, emotionally they sometimes were brought back to a moment in the war, whether it was here at Pearl Harbor or receiving bad news in a telegram or remembering FDR on the radio or certain visceral things just brought them back to. You felt like they were just missing something that happened yesterday, the way that they responded. And yet, it is true that when you see someone who's 5 years old telling you a story, you know it's a long time ago. And for me, part of the power of the whole process of making the film, seeing how those moments that people lived through so long ago can come to the surface so quickly, and those years really do collapse in their own looks. And it makes the past seem so much more tangible and real. You can really reach out and touch it in a way that when you're looking at old, you know, black and white newsreels, it's easy to feel like that's, you know, that's ancient history. It doesn't really have anything to do with my life today. And yet here's a person, you know, an 80-year-old person telling you that this is something that they remember like it was yesterday. You have a different sense of time, for sure.
Let's hear a bit of President Roosevelt speaking to the American people on the radio.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at the moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has compared with success far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, firmness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long, hard. With thy blessing, we shall prevail for the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country. And with our sister nations in a world unity, spell a sure peace. A peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men. And a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
Of Falstaff, composed by William Walton and performed by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. Ken Burns.
You begin to realize that embedded in every frame of our film, along with our country's great promise, often not last, is that in exceptional times, in extraordinary times especially, there are no ordinary lives. That's the meaning of our country, it's the meaning of this film, and it's in the testimony of all of these people that we had the privilege to bear witness to their stories. I mean, even if you're on once or twice in the film, that cameo or appearance, there's a kind of dignity to your recollection of what you did. And that's what we were looking for. Felt that the Second World War had been sort of smothered in that myth, but it's also continually distracted by unnatural instance celebrity generals and politicians and strategy and tactics to the exclusion of what really actually happens to human beings in war. A fascination with armaments and weaponry and to the exclusion of what happens in war and a demonization of the enemy, particularly the Nazis with the swastika and the evil little mustache of that horrible man, that distracts us from what actually happens in war. And this is what we asked ourselves, a very simple question. What was it like to be in that war? And then as a corollary, what was it like to be home, you know, worrying, working, grieving in the face of that cataclysm? And that is a simple equation, deceptively simple equation.
Producer Lynn Novick.
I think we'd like to think about this super patriotic time when everybody worked together. It was like that. I mean, we had a great leader who inspired the country, and people would feel like they were working for some higher purpose, and sacrifices they were making and everything that was required to win the war was necessary and worth it. And yet, we had a black market. We had horrible segregation. We had internment of Japanese Americans. We had a lot of complicated things going on in our country, and that's part of the war story too, and we didn't want to leave those kind of more complicated aspects of what happened at home out of the film. It was very important to us to sort of show a more complicated, nuanced picture of what life was like at home. What I kept being struck by, it just amazed how much people are able to maintain their humanity and their dignity and sometimes their sense of humor through that. And it gave me just a deeper understanding of sort of the human condition of what people are capable of, good and bad, in these extreme situations of life and death and horror and nobility and all the things that happen in war. It's touched me in a very profound way. I think that will be part of me forever, really, just about what beings will do and can do in these situations. I really don't understand very well before, on a visceral level.
In a minute, Ken Burns talks about how he approached the music for the film. I'm David Cruz. This is an inside look at the making of Ken Burns' The War.
The Sears Tower, the Great Pyramids, the Statue of Liberty, these are all big things. One thing that's not on the list, WILL's pledge drive. In fact, our pledge drives have been getting smaller and smaller each year, all thanks to you and the Power Hour. During the Power Hour, we'll raise a full day's worth of pledges in 1 hour. That way, we can cut down on the length of the pledge drive. So tune into the Power Hour, 7 a.m. Thursday, November 11th, and keep pledge drives as small as possible.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a Graham Harines Piano Plus, Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Harines Piano Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston Buddy, and other fine pianos.
Welcome back to an in-depth look at the making of Ken Burns' The War. I'm David Cruz.
Interesting. I think we do music quite differently from other filmmakers, both feature and documentary.
Ken Burns.
Music for a film is a score. That's really a mathematical term. It refers to the fact that once people finish editing or get very close to finish, they lock the picture and then give it to a composer, then add music to what's there, hoping to amplify emotions that they hope are there. And that's obviously not always the case. For us, we want music to be an organic and authentic part of our process. So of the elements that we work with, visual and oral, we record our music at the beginning. We identify that music very early on in editing, so the pace and rhythm, the natural pace and rhythm of existing music, can help dictate the pace and rhythm of the show. And the music insinuates itself in a very good way into meaning and the emotion and the effect of the film.
That's Duke Ellington and his orchestra performing Solitude. Ken Burns.
We will, in the case of the war, identify a great deal of found music. We will commission some compositions, in our case by the brilliant Wynton Marsalis. And we will also identify various tunes that we like that we will then go in to the recording session and record 15, 20 different versions of it, of unimportant length, so that we can get the feeling of the piece. The musicians can play the way they want to play, and then we adjust that in the course of editing to the film. And it's so funny that in the last 30 years, one of the things that people talk about most about our films is the music. And I think it has to do with that process, that rather than add on the end as a kind of amplifier, instead it's very much a part of the essential elements, is as important as the still photographs or the first-person voices or the newsreels or the interviews or the live cinematography or the sound, complex sound effects track or the narration. All of these things are the integral part that we work on from the very beginning. It's only music in other circumstances that's added later, almost as an afterthought. We don't want it to be an afterthought. It has to be an integral part of what we're trying to say and express. And people respond to it. They feel it. We've always described ourselves historically as emotional archaeologists, uninterested in the dry dates and facts of the past, but it's true musically as well. We just don't want music to be the thing that happens after it's done. We want music to be there from the get-go.
Thank you. That's a composition called America My Home, written by Wynton Marsalis. You're listening to a conversation with Ken Burns about the making of his new film, The War. I'm David Cruz.
There's a funny conversation that goes on when you deal, as I do, entirely with historical material. That is to say, you want to be, A, faithful to the period, so the music you want to play is mostly from that period. At the same time, you're a filmmaker and know you can do whatever you want. You just want music to be effective. And so you're always mindful of what the subjects of your film are listening to, in this case, the troops. And indeed, our film is filled with a great deal of swing and jazz and other popular music from the period that actually, in some ways, gives you the best sense the times were like. At the same time, I've got much bigger fish to fry as a filmmaker. I'm trying to unite a complicated story, and this one, this interweaving the personal stories of 50 individuals set against the backdrop of the greatest cataclysm in human history, the Second World War. So my music also has to work in a different way. It just can't merely illustrate the musical tastes of a period. It also has to do a hugely complicated and, I think, sophisticated emotional job of communicating something deeper than just this is what the boys were listening to. And so in the case of The War, it brought us to Wynton Marsalis, who composed a special suite of original music to cover the four towns with the way we've told the story of the Second World War is entirely from the bottom up. So we were trying to get music from Wynton that would evoke each one of the towns and then also evoke a special circumstance of battle. And he did this so magnificently that the music, in a way, bridges the gap between the found music that we use, both popular and classical, and our modern sensibilities. And that is, in a way, what history is. History is not about the past. The past is gone. We'll never get it back. History is a set of questions we in the present ask of the past. It's informed entirely by our own anxieties and interests and compassions and sensitivities and worries and us for the future. And I think that what Wynton's done is provided us with music that bridges that gap between those seemingly distant events and right now and what we're concerned about right now.
Moving Back, written by Wynton Marsalis. Ken Burns.
After the found music and this composed music, the next thing is the surprise of classical music for our film. We've used periodically in the past, over the last 30 years of making film, so little classical music that I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that the pieces tended to be extended and we couldn't control them as much in terms of our moods. And yet, in this film, there's more classical music than anything else that we've had, and it is so powerful and so evocative and so varied, ranging from William Walton to Aaron Copland to Schnittke and Edgar Meyer and Olivier Messiaen, who composed his music in an internment camp in Europe. That it has an immediacy. It becomes, in a way, at times, a sound effect, a way to bring alive the oppressive heat and rotting stench of a Pacific island, or the bitter cold and stiff as cordwood dying bodies in the Battle of the Bulge, or just the sense of importance, I think, of gravitas that a classical composition of the, at least the kind that we chose, brings to the story we're trying to tell, which is, of course, trying to get our hearts and our minds around the murder of nearly 60 million people.
Here's a small bit of the piece that Olivier Messiaen wrote while in a POW camp. He wrote the Quartet for the End of Time for the musicians available to him, a pianist, violinist, cellist, and in this movement, a clarinetist. From the Quartet for the End of Time by Olivier Messiaen, that was a bit of the third movement. In several of his documentaries, Ken Burns includes a central musical theme. For The War, Nora Jones performs the piece.
We have an anthem by Gene Shear called American Anthem, written only a dozen years ago, having nothing to do with the Second World War, originally recorded by an opera star, the great mezzo-soprano Denise Graves, because Gene was in the opera world and felt to some extent that it had been hijacked and had, he'd always intended it as a popular song. We were interested initially in just the melody. The editors used it throughout the film, a very simple, haunting piece, not too dissimilar from Ashokan Farewell, the simple but beautiful piece that captured people's imaginations from our Civil War series. But I had heard it first on the radio, bringing my father's ashes back from Michigan. He was a veteran of the Second World War and passed away in 2001, and I had sad and unhappy and heavy task of carrying his ashes back to New Hampshire, where I live, and heard this tune and pulled over and just wept like a baby. And the lyrics always stuck in my mind, and particularly the chorus, "Let them say of me, I was one who believed in sharing the blessings I've received. Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I did my best for you."
All we've been given by those who came before, the dream of a nation where freedom would endure, the working prayers of centuries have brought us to this day. What shall be our legacy? What will our children say? Let them say of me, I was one in sharing the blessings I received. Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you. With the gifts that they were given, were determined to leave more. Battles fought together, acts of conscience fought alone. These are the seeds from which America has grown. Let them say, I was one who believed in sharing the blessings that deceived. Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you. For those who think they have nothing to share, who feel in their hearts there is no hero there, know each quiet act of dignity is that which fortifies the soul of a nation. I was one who believed in sharing the blessings I received. Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, I gave my best to you. America, I gave my best to you.
Nora Jones performed American Anthem from the film soundtrack. Coming up, we continue hearing the sounds of the war, including what the soldiers were listening to. I'm David Cruz. This is an inside look at the making of Ken Burns' The War.
Thanks to these businesses for helping to make WILL's Central Illinois World War II Stories Project possible. Clark Lindsay Village, Eco Water Systems, IBEW Local 601, and Super Value. Thank you.
You can learn more about careers in broadcasting that go beyond on-air performance at the Illinois Broadcasters Association's Free Job and Career Fair, Friday, September 28th at Illinois State University. Companies large and small from throughout Illinois will be there to discuss education needed for careers in broadcasting. The Illinois Broadcasters Association's Free Job and Career Fair is Friday, September 28th from 2 to 4 in the Bone Student Center at Illinois State University in Normal.
Programming on AM 5 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com.
Welcome back to an in-depth conversation with Ken Burns about the making of his new film, The War. I'm David Cruz. The filmmakers were telling a different kind of World War II story, so they tried to stay away from the expected martial music.
You know, Winton provided us a couple of very, one could say, militaristic drum tattoos that bring something in, but they're so quickly erased and replaced by the blues, the essential music of America. And this is the form that allows us to transcend bad times, to express the difficulty, but also transcend them. So his haunting pieces about battle are so evocative, but a couple of them start with that drum tattoo as if you are actually going to go into a martial circumstance, and then it's obliterated by the absurdity of the superficiality of that martial music. I mean, I've got nothing against it. The Civil War was filled with upbeat marches and that kind of thing, but the Second World War and the interior way that we've pursued the storytelling, that it isn't from the top down, you're not watching over Lincoln's shoulders hundreds of thousands of troops march by, you're in those troops, and you're worrying about mom, and you're worrying about your girlfriend, and you're worrying about your sister, and you're worrying about yourself and whether you're going to survive the next moment, the next minute, the next hour, the next day. And that adds a different kind of spin to things, and I think that not doing the jingoistic anthems and marches was important.
Another expectation that Burns tried to thwart centered on the signature tunes of the 1940s.
I felt that the Second World War is really a slippery slope. You know, we call it the Good War. It's not the Good War. It's the worst war ever. We wrap the Second World War in bloodless, gallant myth. It was the worst war ever. We think of it as safely black and white. Everybody saw it who participated in color, and now we've discovered a lot of color footage, and we can help wake up that kind of sleepy, oh, you know, that was the good war sort of sensibility. And so you want to avoid a few tunes, it seems to me, that are so emblematic that they help lull you to sleep. They become a kind of historical lullabies, and that would be In the Mood. You know, I mean, that is the classic thing. There's no Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy in our film. There's no In the Mood. We do have American Patrol, which is known, which is very, very familiar, and several other things that we do. But we look for something that is of the period but doesn't have the just instantaneous association that it does become a lullaby. You want to wake people up in a film of this sort. You don't want to provide them with the satisfying bromides. And look, I have nothing against In the Mood. The reason why we know, the reason why it's a cliche is because it's such a great tune. Or Sing, 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 which is, you know, of all of Benny Goodman's tunes, the most propulsive you could possibly think of, and it's wonderful. And we do play it to effect in many, many films.
Bit of Sing, 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 performed by Benny Goodman and his orchestra. Although a tune like that isn't in Burns' new film on the war, popular music was a significant soundtrack in soldiers' lives. Soldiers in World War II got their news and information from Armed Forces Radio. For entertainment, they could go to a USO show or listen to a victory disc. Author Chuck Granata.
I think the whole idea behind the V-Disc program was to boost the morale of the troops. People recognize that our young servicemen, 18 years old, 19 years old, were overseas in a foreign land fighting a very difficult war. And whether they expressed it or not, they certainly missed the comforts of home, one of them being popular music. And one of the things that the record companies tried to do to boost morale and to give the servicemen something from their industry was to provide them with music, current music.
Here's an example from Nat King Cole.
This is Johnny Miller, the bass player.
This is Oscar Moore, the guitar player.
And this is Nat King Cole. The three of us are going to bring you a few special V-Diffs, and we hope that you really enjoy them, cats.
Knock me a kiss, you'll never miss when I'm ready to go. But if you can't smile and say yes, please don't cry and say no.
At the time that the V-Discs started to be produced, there was a musicians' ban in America. And Duke Ellington couldn't take his band into the studio and make a record. Frank Sinatra couldn't go into the studio to make a record with Axel Stordahl in 1943 because of this musicians' ban. So, surprisingly enough, the V-Discs were exempt from the rules of the musician's band. So if it were for V-Disc, which was a non-commercial product, a jazz combo or a Frank Sinatra or a Bing Crosby could go into the studio with an orchestra and make a record.
Seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart and mind embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut trees, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's light and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
From a Victory Disc recording, that was I'll Be Seeing You, performed by Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra, featuring Frank Sinatra. You're listening to a conversation with Ken Burns about the making of his film, The War. I'm David Cruz. Music is only a part of the sound experience in a film. For The War, Ken Burns and crew needed to do a lot of exploring.
For me, one of the horrific cliches of a historical documentary film is the tramp, tramp, tramp sound effect added crudely and thoughtlessly to the imagery of marching Nazis down a Paris street or whatever it would be. We've always tried to wake up our films, still photographs as well as the newsreels, and I'm always surprised out on the road that people are flabbergasted to learn that all of this material, all the footage that we get, comes to us completely silently, with the exception of the handful of newsreel stories that we show. And we show them as a way to show the subjective view of the people in our four towns. They go to the movie house, they look and find out to their horror the dead bodies of American soldiers washing up, lapping up at the shore at Tarawa, a Pacific island in the Gilbert chain that was the site of a particularly brutal battle. But we begin with nothing. We begin with a blank slate. And rather than add that crude and thoughtlessly constructed tramping feet, we literally sew together hundreds and hundreds of effects, sometimes for one shot. We want to bring it alive. We trust that old photograph, and now in this film, more often than not, the footage is the closest we'll ever get to that reality. So we need to know what a Panzer tank sounded like. We needed to know what a Japanese Zero sounded like, what a German 88 gun sounded like, what a M1 rifle or a Thompson submachine gun sounded like, what was a mortar like. And then we collected literally thousands of sounds of battle and figure out how to make them present.
Let's hear some of the radio broadcasts of the big events at the end of World War II.
General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base.
7 p.m. Eastern Wartime, Bob Trout reporting.
The Japanese have accepted our terms fully. That's the word we've just received from the White House in Washington. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War. The United Nations, on land, on the sea, in the air, and to the four corners of the earth, are united and are victorious.
Filmmaker Ken Burns.
As William Faulkner said, history is not was, but is, and that's exactly what you want. Someone once told me that good history is that you pay attention thinking that it might not turn out the way you know it did. That you go to Ford's Theater hopeful that this time the bullet will misfire or the presidential box is locked and Booth can't get in there. That a particular battle is not going to be a defeat or a surrender, but some glorious thing. And that's good storytelling, and that's what we try to do, that the inevitability we know has happened, you stick around because you're not sure that it will take place the same way. And all of that is this very subtle interplay of the principal visual and I think to a large extent and underreported sense, oral elements that go into making these films. The narration, the first-person voice, the sound effects, and the music.
This conversation about the making of The War, a Ken Burns film, was produced by Joyride Media. Paul Chufo and Joshua Jackson are the producers. Our executive producer is John Vernile. All songs on this program can be found on the Sony BMG Legacy recordings, The War, a Ken Burns film, the soundtrack. Songs Without Words, classical music from The War. Sentimental Journey, hits from the Second World War. And I'm Beginning to See the Light, dance hits from the Second World War. The companion book, The War, An Intimate History, 1941 to 1945, by Jeffrey Ward and Ken Burns, is published by Alfred A. Knopf. The War, a Ken Burns film, can be seen on PBS. For more information, go to pbs.org. Special thanks go to Adam Block, Steve Berkowitz, Tom Cording, Andy Kahn, Sam Gomez, Eric Mulk, Shannon Mueller, Michelle Clark, Kevin Flynn, and Nadine Nassar. I'm David Cruz, and thanks for listening.
Listening to AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. Jeff Bossert, good morning. I'm Jeff Bossert, your host for the Afternoon Magazine today. And coming up at 1 o'clock Central Time, I'll talk with Kate Murphy discussing her book Crazy 08 about the 1908 baseball season. And we'll have a full hour of news, weather, and other information coming up in the next hour. Right now, a look at update market numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade, or rather from Kansas City. December wheat is at 880, up 15 and a quarter. March at 877 and a half, up 14 and a half. December wheat at from the Chicago Board of Trade at 902, up 24 and a quarter. March at 904 and a half, up 21 and a quarter. December corn at 374 and three quarters, up one and a quarter. March corn at 390, up one. May corn 399, up a half. November soybeans at 979, up quarter. January soybeans at 995, up a half. March at 1,002, down three quarters. October soybean meal at on the market 272.50, down one or up 130. October soybean oil at 38.94, down 37. October live cattle at 97.55, down 10. December live cattle at 165, down 12 and a half. September feeder cattle at 115.90, down 25. October feeder cattle at 116, 2.5 down 22.5. October Lean Hogs 61.05 down 47.5. And February Frozen Pork Bellies at 87.60 up 10. At this hour, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is at 13,742.56, down 15. The NASDAQ at 26,74.15, up 6.20. Meteorologist Ed Kieser's forecast this afternoon, mostly cloudy in Illinois and Indiana with scattered showers and thunderstorms possible. Highs ranging from 72 in far northwestern Illinois to around 90 in southern Indiana. Tonight in northwestern Illinois, mostly cloudy with scattered showers during the evening hours, then becoming partly cloudy after midnight. Elsewhere, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms possible. Lows ranging from 47 in far northwestern Illinois to 70 in far southern Indiana.